You can now hear Film Actually on Stitcher Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or WebOS device. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed, no memory wasted. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com.
Hi, Ben.
Hi, Mr. Taylor. Hi.
Look, my TV's not on, so...
Oh, no.
You're having problems
no,
with your setting.
No, Ben, it's nothing like that. Diane and I were just wondering, this is going to sound strange coming from me.
About that.
Just mosquitoes.
Yeah,
or something
else. Chowing down.
I've never been bothered by them.
Huh.
In fact, I don't think I've ever been bitten by one of them. As far as I know, nobody in my family's ever been affected by them. Miss, can you ever suck on your son?
I don't know, Dad.
You don't know.
It'll be much less terrifying if you just come to me.
Lesbians got
make love in the hammock.
What?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Film Actually, episode 106 for the 30th of October, 2010. And happy Halloween, everybody. The opening clip was a little bit in that theme. So if you know what it is, you can jump over to the forum and put it in. This is Film Actually, the official movie podcast of geekactually.com. And this week, we are going to be doing the usual little bit of entertainment buzz. We have a new list of five, and we are going to review the film The Social Network. And I am joined in studio by Josh Philpott. How are you, Josh?
I'm good, dude. Like, I'm really looking forward to this show, but my energy is already fading, which is weird, because usually
I've got... What's the heat?
It's the heat. That's what it is, isn't it?
It's hot. It's warm.
So, look, everybody's going to be real surprised, but I'm not actually on the caffeine tip. I'm actually drinking something mildly... refreshing instead, which is freaking me out, man. Summer's coming, dude. There'll be no more heavy coffee drinking.
There will be for me. Bless you. Now, the chat room has basically said, Dave, you haven't said if I got the movie right from last week on the forums. I haven't actually been in the forums much this week. I haven't even put up last week's list of five. I'm going to get in there. But yes, you are correct, and I will say it now so everybody knows. Last week was The Thing, which is... Josh and I often talk about that quote. It's one of my favorite quotes from The Thing. I just love the character it's Knowles.
Knowles,
yeah. I love that. Chariots of the Gods, man. Practically out of South America. Now, Josh actually said that the opening clip for this week was slightly obscure. Yeah. Now, I've actually had a chat with...
I'm just saying.
Yeah, I had a chat with Rogue Sire in the forum, and I basically said that they will start becoming more and more obscure because people are getting them too fast. So we're going to start making them very obscure indeed. Ooh. All right, let's get on with this. We've got a bunch of stuff to pack in here. So, and Josh and I are here alone this week. We haven't got a guest because Social Network was one of those films where we really want to talk about it.
And we're going to talk a lot about it.
We're going to talk a lot about it, and we don't want to get derailed, and we want to make sure that it's a good, clean review. Not clean as in no bad language, clean as in makes sense, because it is... I think it's an important film this year, so we'll talk about it. Let's just run through some details real quick. I have a poster. Let's bring the poster up. Here we are. Now, The Social Network, directed by David Fincher and written by Aaron Sorkin. If those names are familiar to you at all, that's because David Fincher directed Fight Club and Seven and The Game and Alien 3 and Panic Room. And Aaron Sorkin was the writer and creator of such television classics as Sports Night, The West Wing, and Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip. He also wrote The American President with Michael Douglas, which actually made it to one of our lists a couple of weeks ago. So I think Aaron Sorkin is actually one of the finest screenwriters working in Hollywood today. It is based on the book The Accidental Billionaires by Ben Mezrich. It stars Jesse Eisenberg, Andrew Garfield, who, for those who don't know, a bit of trivia for you, is the new Spider-Man.
Oh, that's official now?
That is official. He is the new Spider-Man. Armie Hammer, Justin Timberlake, and Rashida Jones. Just to name a few, there's actually a very big cast, but a lot of them are fairly obscure actors. And the reason why I put Rashida Jones in there is because out of all the women in the film, she's probably the strongest character. The women are actually kind of backseated in this film. And we talked about that a couple of weeks ago about whether or not the film was misogynistic or not. We'll talk a little bit more about that this week as well. Mm. Okay, so according to Columbia Pictures themselves, their synopsis reads, On the fall night in 2003, Harvard undergrad and computer programming genius Mark Zuckerberg sits down at his computer and heatedly begins working on a new idea. In a fury of blogging and programming, what begins in his dorm room soon becomes a global social network and a revolution in communication. A mere 6 years and 500 million friends later, Mark Zuckerberg is the youngest billionaire in history. But for this entrepreneur, success leads to both personal and legal complications. And we have the trailer, which we'll play here. Now, this is actually, quite frankly, one of the finest trailers I think it's probably come around in quite some time. It's just beautifully put together. So here's the trailer for The Social Network.
Substantial in order to get the attention of the clubs.
Why?
Because they're exclusive and fun, and they lead to a better life.
People want to go on the internet and check out their friends, so why not build a website that offers that? Friends, pictures, profiles.
I'm talking about taking the entire social experience of college and putting it online.
Site got 2,200 hits within 2 hours?
1,000. 22,000.
This idea is potentially worth millions of dollars.
Millions?
You stole our website.
They're saying we stole the Facebook.
I know what it said.
So did we?
$1 million isn't cool. You know what's cool? $1 billion.
You're going to get left behind. It's moving faster than any of us ever imagined.
Get left behind.
Let's sue him in federal court.
I can't wait to stand over your shoulder and what you write as a check.
If you guys were the inventors of Facebook, you'd have invented Facebook.
Is there anything that you need to tell me?
Your actions could have permanently destroyed everything I've been working on.
We have been working on.
Did you like being a joke? Do you want to go back to that?
Mark!
This is our time.
You're being accused of intentionally breaching security, violating copyrights, violating individual privacy.
Your best friend is suing you for $600 million.
As for the charges, I believe I deserve some recognition from this board.
I'm sorry?
Yes.
I don't understand.
Which part?
Okay, I'm going to go so far as to say that when they first talked about making a Facebook movie, I scoffed at the idea and basically thought this is probably the most stupid idea I've ever heard. Mm-hmm. Then I read Ben Mezrich's book and I thought, there is potential here. Then I found out David Fincher was signed on to direct it and I thought, now we're getting somewhere. And then when I heard Aaron Sorkin was writing the screenplay, I went, oh my God, what's going on here? Mm-hmm. And then as the film started to unfold, we started to find out more and more about it and the fact that it wasn't just about Facebook. And this has got to be made very clear. It is not a biopic of Facebook.
Yeah.
Some of the history, in fact, is a little shaky. And I can't tell you what parts of the history are shaky because nobody really knows, all right? And this is the problem. I've heard different reports saying that the girl in the opening scene that dumps him is a complete fabrication. I've heard other reports say that he's had the same girlfriend since he was in college before Facebook and that he was never the loner. I've heard other reports say that his current girlfriend is a long-term girlfriend, but he met her at Facebook. She was one of the employees. Mm-hmm. So I have no idea what the true history is. What we do know is that the producer of the film, Dana, what's his name? I forget what his name is. Anyway, Dana, at Trigger Street Productions, basically said that Columbia Pictures wasn't about to pour a whole bunch of money into a film if it was going to reach a lot of legal battles.
Exactly.
And so far, nobody has been sued over any of this because there's obviously enough grains of truth in it throughout that they can't really sue for it. Okay,
and now, to be honest, it doesn't take. Tell a story that probably really Like, no one really in that film gets portrayed badly.
No, and in fact, I think it was Molly Wood on Buzz Out Loud who actually said Mark Zuckerberg actually comes across as kind of a badass in this film. You know, it's not the personal massacre that everybody thought it was going to be on him. He actually, yes, he's not a particularly nice or likable person, but he's a social misfit. He's a social outcast, and that kind of rubs people the wrong way.
Yeah.
There's a lot of feeling that he may actually have Asperger's and all sorts of stuff, the way he relates to people. Mm. That doesn't necessarily make him an evil person. That just makes him a bit of a social misfit. Now, Aaron Sorkin actually said that, as examples, the blog posts that are actually, and I've actually gone and read these, by the way, this is not some fabrication. The blog posts that he is blogging at the beginning of the film, you can find archives of the Zuckett blog, and you can read it. And he used those blog posts word for word. So when he's actually blogging in the opening while programming the face smash concept, he is, those are actually Zuckerberg's words. He does make reference to a girl that treated him badly. The name has been changed to protect her, obviously, for the film. The other factors, you know, the Sean Parker character, how much of him was just for dramatic effect and how much of it was the real Sean Parker. All of that aside, let's push all of that aside for a minute and look at it from a film's point of view. All right. As a film, I'm just going to go out on a limb and say I freaking loved this film.
No disagreeing here.
All right. This film was one of the finest pieces of cinema I've seen this year. Josh and I went into the advanced screening of it. We saw it on a great big screen. It was lovely. And all the way through it, I think Josh and I both had this warm feeling inside. When they're doing tech stuff, you understand what they're doing. There's no fabrication here.
Yeah, exactly. But again, we should specify that you have to know what.
Yeah, and it, but if you don't understand what it is, it's going to be gobbledygook whether they made it up or not.
Yeah.
The point is that there is enough of that reality in it that it doesn't feel like another The Net or another Hackers where they just made stuff up to make it sound complicated. This is all very real tech.
Yeah.
It's all very real feeling. Performance-wise, this film, the performances are Class A, right across the board. And I'm going to go...
Not a single failure.
Not a single failure.
On anyone.
And I'm going to bring up this picture of Jesse Eisenberg right here and just say that he does not mimic Mark Zuckerberg. And this is the most important thing about this film. They haven't tried to... It's not like a W where they try and mimic all the characters. In, but he embodies the essence of Zuckerberg. He's got that social awkwardness. He's got that genius who isn't understood by the world qualities to him and so forth. He is mesmerizing to watch. I'm dominating this conversation. Josh, tell me what you think.
No, look, I totally agree, man. I mean, I think the show stealer is, of course, definitely Eisenberg. The other person that I think really deserves a huge amount of credit is Justin Timberlake playing Sean Parker, because it's hard for some people to believe that this guy could actually put on a good performance. Not a piss take, not you know, sort of a role in a comedy. This guy acts brilliantly in this film, and he's got that great wily sense to him that, you know, is a dangerous kind of person.
There is a kinetic energy about him where you feel... You can almost feel it crackling from him, you know?
But like it's in a lot of scenes. There's a scene in particular where he is going, and again, this is not spoiler territory, so don't worry. But there's a scene where he's going to meet them for the first time, and he comes in with a great kind of tour de force and sort of, you know, signing things and talking to people and so on and so forth. And it's that whole sleazy over-the-topness that you know means that the guy doesn't have much substance behind that, but he has that social connection kind of a feeling, and that may just be because Justin Timberlake is that kind of a person in reality, but
I'm sure there's a lot of Sean Parker in there as well, though.
Exactly, you know? Yeah, no, and that's the great thing about the performance, and there are some brilliant speeches between the two of them, and I actually felt more energy between those two than I did between Jesse Eisenberg and his partner.
Andrew Garfield. The Severin character. Yeah.
But Andrew Garfield's character is very well done as well, because he is supposed to be playing the character that you don't like as much. He's the guy that didn't put in as much effort towards the project. And I mean, that was throughout the thing.
Well, it wasn't that he would put in enough effort. I think one of the things that they keep talking about is he's got old-fashioned ideas. He's trying to run it like an old-fashioned business. And Eisenberg and Sean Parker are both basically miles ahead of him.
Yep. Exactly.
In the sense of how this should be marketed, how it should be monetized, you know? Yeah. And I think that's the problem with the Severin character, is he's way out of his depth.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And I mean, that's what I mean. It's like he's going out and he is trying to do these things, but he also has another job and something like that. Like, it's not a full kind of, like, Zuckerberg is there and in it with everything he has, you know. And like, I mean, he was monetized. So that was it. You know, that he was deep into the programming code. He knew what he wanted to create. And I love Eisenberg's portrayal of this character, because it's great the way that they've handled it. And like you said, it's just so great to see someone hit with so much power on the front of how, like, nerds, techies really are. And just to see that come across brilliantly handled, like, no falseness, no crappy kind of a look at them, they're wily and kooky. It's like, these guys are
This is dudes. No Big Bang Theory here.
Exactly. These are... guys are just brains, right? And they will write code. And I love the concept that they have, the words that they use for describing them when they're in the zone. What was it called?
They're jacked in.
Yeah, they're jacked in. And it's like, it's interesting to hear that, because as someone that used to program, there is that concept. Anyone in the chat room...
Or it's wired in. Wired in? I forget what it is.
I think it's wired in. But it's that whole concept of just being completely focused. And
yeah, they put their headphones on and they're focused on the screen and you don't disturb them.
Yep, exactly. And you just leave them alone and they're coding thousands of lines of code a second. And it's just so nice to see it handled properly. And also to... It will be nice to see the world see that kind of a side, that kind of reality to the way programming is. It opens a door that kind of a lot of people are kind of scared to look into, because they just figure there's just crazy, weird people inside there. But really, I mean, the reality is that they're just, you know, really smart people that know what they're doing.
I was actually thinking about, if you think about the Mark Zuckerberg character in this film, there is actually shades of the Sheldon character from Big Bang Theory. He is so... in his own world, that the outside world doesn't actually... He doesn't relate to it in any way, shape, or form, which is really highlighted by that one little monologue that he gives in the hearing when the guy says, "Are you paying attention to me?" Yeah. And he turns around and delivers... We won't spoil, but he turns around and delivers this wonderful monologue about the fact that he isn't listening to him.
No,
you know?
Not at all.
And you just sit there and you sit back after he's finished talking like, "Oh my God." Right. You know? It's like the sheer intelligence behind everything that he says.
He has this this sense to him, and it is really handled really well. He has this sense that anyone talking to him, anyone sort of like engaging him in conversation that isn't business related, is just in his way. And that's really well handled by Eisenberg, because he just holds this kind of sense whenever someone's talking to him of kind of dulled eyes. Like, he's just ignoring everyone. Like, he has a goal, he has a focus. He wants to get rich, and he wants to do it via something. Never once does he falter from that concept.
Funny you say that. I actually don't even think he wants to be rich. I think he wants recognition.
I think he wants power.
He wants power. Because even to this day, the real Zuckerberg, they actually talk about the fact that he's very awkward about money.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to be. It's like he never really thought about how to monetize Facebook. It wasn't his primary focus, you know? This whole thing about the business side of it was like, and I think that's why he attaches to Sean Parker so much, because Sean Parker wants to do that side of it, you know? And he just wants to program. He just wants to make something that everybody sees. He wants to be, I think what's more important than money, he wants to be popular.
Yeah.
Because he's a social outcast.
Exactly.
You know?
And, like, I mean, he drives so passionately towards this, and it's really interesting. There's one scene in particular, again, no spoilers, but there's one scene in particular where they get to an achievement point in the film, and he's talking with somebody on the phone, and he hangs up, and there's that great moment where he's sitting outside looking in on the party happening, and he's just got that smile on his face. And it's a really powerful scene, because you can kind of see that he wants to create, you know, he enjoys the sense of it more than he does the actual interaction of it. It's like, it's the feeling of kind of being wanted or doing something that's achieved something. And it's like, I mean, again, you're right, Dave. It's just, it's handled well, it's shot well, the dialogue is brilliantly cutting, the storyline is without flaw. There is not a single moment that lets you down. And the thing that I love is, throughout the movie, you don't think about the fact that by the point where they're having these conversations and these court cases and all that, when you get to the end and you find out that basically it's like, yeah, you're going to lose a whole lot of money, okay, cool, we're done. And you don't realize that they're that powerful at that stage, that really it's just a sit-through court case. And it's just like, you're going to get fined, it's going to cost you a lot of money. well,
but in the great scheme of things, it's really not.
It's not even a flinch. Like at the stage, it's like you're going to be fined $6 million, and they've got $250 million at the stage, and it's like it's nothing more than a flinch. But you don't realize that at the time because it's kind of this whole flow of like court cases and things that you've done wrong and stuff like this, and all talking about it. And then when you get to the end, to kind of finish it off like that and just be like, all right, I'll sign you a check. And you know, it's kind of you're like, oh, that's it. You know, like you feel like it's all coming to a head. You feel like he's walking to an execution. That's the way it feels.
Yeah.
Whereas when you actually get to the end of the movie, I really enjoyed that scene.
It's about the journey. It's not about the resolution.
Exactly. The resolution is the smallest part of the film.
It's about for those who haven't seen it, the structure of the film basically is told in flashbacks. So what you've got is you've got two hearings. Because there's two separate court cases against Mark Zuckerberg. And we are flashing between those two different hearings. And in those two different hearings, while they're giving their depositions, we're flashing back and seeing the results of those stories. We're seeing them told.
Yeah.
Now, the way Sorkin actually talks about the development of this film, he said it's a little bit... Now, I hate to use this phrase because it's not, to be very clear, it's not Rashomon, but it's a little bit Rashomon-like. Now, if you haven't seen Rashomon, it's an Akira Kurosawa film basically where a couple get raped and robbed by some bandits in the woods. It's an old black and white samurai film.
Yeah.
And when they get back into town, they capture the burglars, basically, who did all this. Mm. And in the trial, you are told the story from everybody's different point of view.
Yeah.
And it's completely different on everybody's story, and it's about trying to figure out what actually happened from everybody's different point of view. So you keep seeing the same film over and over and over again, but from a different point of view. Mm-hmm. And it's a really, really brilliant film. And what Sorkin said was a little bit Rashomon-like here. What they had was transcripts from the depositions from two different court cases, plus the book, plus online history, plus this. And basically he's pieced together a screenplay which tells it from all of these different points of view. So you're kind of left at the end of the film going, well, we don't really know what happened. We know from Eduardo Severin's point of view. We know from Sean Parker's point of view. We know from from Zuckerberg's point of view. We know from the Winklevosses' point of view. Mm. But we don't really know which one is actually true, right? And because they're sealed court records, of course, we probably never will. Yeah. But I think there is enough of it that we can piece together the story for ourselves. And it's a really brilliantly structured film. It's never boring. The pace is kept up. And if you think it's a film about Facebook, then you're misguided. It's not actually about Facebook. It's about the people.
Exactly.
And it's about what went on to make this phenomenon happen.
Exactly. Right?
And behind the scenes. Now, let's talk about Armie Hammer for a minute. Now, Armie Hammer is an actor I'd never heard of before. Yeah. He plays the Winklevoss twins. Now, this is...
Now, let's make that really clear.
Really clear. He plays the Winklevoss twins. Now, or as Mark Zuckerberg refers to them in the film, as the Winklevi.
That's so good.
Once again, David Fincher is proving that when it comes to technicals in films, he is afraid of nothing and will innovate to make anything work. This is the best example of having the same actor play a double role in a film I think ever committed to film.
Absolutely.
To the point where I don't think you were actually aware of it at the beginning of the film, and I said, boy, that's amazing work, because that's the same actor. And you're like, really?
It really caught me by surprise. I mean, I figured maybe they had just
found
two
good
really...
twins. It is... Yeah. Perfect. There is not a seam to be seen, you know?
Yeah.
It is absolutely flawless, and his performance is flawless because the two twins have different personalities.
Mm-hmm.
And you actually can identify the two distinct personalities there. He does a great job. This film has two sequences or two things in it that I think are particularly standout-ish. One is the Winklevoss twins, and the other one is the regatta that is they go to.
Yeah,
because they're rowers, and there's an English regatta, and it's all done to Trent Reznor did a electronic version of Hall of the Mountain King.
Yeah,
and this whole thing is done in kind of this weird, dreamy, slow motiony type thing with this Hall of the Mountain King playing, and it's all shot with tilt shift photography, so all the edges are blurred out, very tilt shifty. And it's mesmerizing. You sit there looking at it going, that is so beautifully put together. It's such a beautiful sequence. And my first thought was, is this completely out of place in this film? But it doesn't feel that way. you actually go along for that beautiful moment in this film. It's like this little art piece in the middle of the film.
And even though they're kind of the bad guys, you can really feel for them, and like you can feel the power that they're trying to put in.
Yeah, well, because also it's a important moment, and this is not really spoilers to the whole story, but it is just a little bit, which is, of course, it's kind of like they're faltering. The Winklevosses were perfect at everything they did, right? They were the perfect all-round American boys, and with their idea being stolen from them, or that they believe their idea was stolen from them, and then the results of the regatta, and it's like they're starting to fray at the seams, and you start to feel this unraveling of these two brothers.
Yeah.
It's really, really cleverly handled. It is a really, really great film, and I do recommend that if you had any reservations at all, just put them aside.
Yeah. No, there is no reason not to see this film. I love every moment of it, and that's a really rare thing for this kind of a film. It's not biographies or, you know, any of this kind of a film telling a true story, even if it is mildly, you know, fictionalized, is something that will have moments that are, you know, boring.
It's a tricky thing to do, because when you know the results, it kind of takes tension away from the film if it's a true story. So they got to work doubly hard to make you really get sucked into the moment, even though you know the resolution.
Yeah, no, and it's one of those great great feats to be able to do it. And you know what? I put this like over 60% down to Sorkin. Mm. Like Sorkin's writing just holds you constantly in this film, because even when they're talking too fast to understand, I would say it's a mixture. It's a half-half mixture between Fincher and thing, because it's the handling of the cameras and also the dialogue that just holds you throughout this whole film. Scenes of merit, the opening scene between him and his soon-to-be not-a-girlfriend. You've got the talk between Sean Parker and
Eduardo Severin?
Mark Zuckerberg.
Oh, Mark Zuckerberg, yep.
The scene between those two, the scene where Mark has a confrontation with Eduardo in the Facebook office. It's like there are so many scenes that are just amazing feats of acting. Like, and you just sit there and you're just completely taken in.
And then, on top of all of that, Sorkin manages to weave a really wicked sense of humor through this entire thing.
Dude.
This film is funny in places. Yeah. The psycho girlfriend of Eduardo Severin, that whole scene is so abstract and out of the blue, where she shows up and he gives her the present. See the film, you'll know what I'm talking about. Or to the little things, like the programmers letting off steam and using a flying fox off the chimney.
Yeah. And it's right.
You know, and it's like these little moments like this all the way through the film. And some of the stuff that comes out of Jesse Eisenberg's mouth is just gold.
Yeah.
It's just his delivery of some of these lines.
I think the greatest moment in this film is his response to the...
Are you paying attention?
Yeah, are you paying attention? That scene, I will have word for word by the time this comes out on DVD, because that is just... I have never been quite so taken aback by something that someone said. And you can really tell why everyone in the room just shuts up.
Now, we've actually had a request from our chat room not to spoil it, because there's a few people in our chat room who want to see it, so we're not going to do spoilers on this film. I will say that initial reactions to this film were, when we walked out of the cinema, I said to Josh, if this was a proper cinema, proper screening right now, I would be buying another ticket and going in and seeing it again.
I would have been right there beside you, man.
I said to Josh, immediately, this film goes into my 5 best films of the year.
Yeah.
And as I've been thinking about it over the last 2 weeks, because we saw it 2 weeks ago, it has slowly been going creeping higher and higher on the list. And I think I am actually probably now prepared to say, I'm going to go out on a limb and say, I think it is actually the film of the year. And we are in October, or almost November. So unless something really staggering comes out between now and Christmas, I think I can pretty much say that this is probably my film of the year.
I'm going to back you up on that.
Yeah, I think it was just such a surprise.
This film, it's been on the top of my radar, and you know, both me and you were giggling little schoolgirls the week leading up to this.
Yes.
Like, we could not wait to get into that cinema, and I was just completely given everything I wanted, which is
absolutely
just such a rarity. Like, there's always something that will let you down when you go to a movie with high expectations, and this, I cannot pick a single moment of that film.
And I can actually honestly say this film has something it kind of has something for everyone. Mm-hmm. If you like good acting, it's got great acting. If you like great writing, it's got great writing. It's well directed. If you're a geek, it's got enough geek to keep you going. If you're not a geek, it won't lose you.
Yeah.
You know, no, the story is absolutely not necessarily about being geeks.
Yeah.
It will give you an insight into that culture that you may not have understood before. If your only experiences with geek culture are The Big Bang Theory, then this film will act as an education just to how accurately portrayed our culture is. Yeah. So it is fabulous and is well worth going to see.
And if nothing else, like, I really just hope that understanding of the geek kind of goes through into people's minds. Like, that's just something I would like to redefine with people. Like, people still think hackers is what geeks are. We don't use visual programs, and we don't skate around wearing giant,
and we don't all have mohawks and purple hair.
No, you know? In fact, we're probably the normalest people, you know.
Yeah, sorry. You know those guys walking down the road in like board shorts and t-shirts? They're probably geeks, you know. Yeah. And I also think that, in particular, in this day and age, the schism between geeks and regular people has shrunk. Mm-hmm. So many more people are having geek tendencies, because we're all on computers now. We're all doing stuff like Facebook. So it is closing. But there is still definitely that little subculture, and that subculture this film really rounds up. I'm going to go out first, and I'm going to say I absolutely 100% recommend this to every single person on the planet. I think that would be my fair assumption.
And for me, there will be no difference either. It is a film that, if you haven't seen, you should see. And you should own it on DVD. This is one of our generation's greats.
Yeah. I will be buying this on Blu-ray the day it comes out.
Absolutely. So. Me too.
Absolutely. Okay, so that was The Social Network, and boy, I've been busting to talk about that. Yeah. I've been busting to talk about that for 2 weeks. All right, so let's talk a little bit about The Hobbit. Now we'll move off Social Network and say that the industrial dispute for The Hobbit has resolved. All right. We talked about this last week. We were saying that SAG and AFTRA had lifted their bans, but Warner Brothers were still going down to talk to them, and there were still chances that it might go offshore. Before we actually talk about the resolution, do you know, Josh, because it's from your homeland, do you know of a show in New Zealand called Close Up?
No, okay. I don't.
It's kind of like a current affairs show by the looks of it. Oh, actually, before we do this, before we talk about The Hobbit, something I was going to talk about the head of the show, but I was so eager to get into Social Network, we just dove straight into it. I just wanted to share something with you that I discovered. This is kind of completely off topic. But I was on my Apple TV two nights ago, and I clicked over to podcasts because there's a podcast category. Now, I don't know if a lot of you know this, but mobile iTunes, Apple TV iTunes, and real iTunes are all kind of separate stores.
Yep.
They have separate ratings. So if you're featured on the new and noteworthy of iTunes, you probably aren't there on the mobile iTunes, and vice versa. You know, it all moves around. It all depends on what they're doing. Well, I was on Apple TV's iTunes store, basically, in their podcast section. And I took a screen. I couldn't take a screenshot, but I had the Nokia N8 sitting in my lap, actually, because I was looking at it. So I shot a picture, and here's my TV set. There we are, new and noteworthy.
Oh, snap.
Right there on the front page of the all podcasts category. So this is including video podcasts, audio podcasts, everything. We're right there on the front. Then I thought, well, what happens if I click the audio only button, so to filter out all of the video stuff? And so I took another picture, because when you filter it down just to audio, there we are right next to... Oh, sorry, no, this is Film and TV. Film and TV. That's right, the all page that was the front page. Then I went to Film and TV, and this is all podcasts and Film and TV category. And here we are, number 3 in New and Noteworthy. Wow. And then I thought, what if we filter it down to just audio, because we're an audio show? We're number 1, dude! We're number 1. And then, here was the one, remember I said I got a little surprise for you?
Yeah.
I scrolled down the page to see what else was there.
Yeah.
And I had to take another screenshot, because there's the Geek Actually After Show at the bottom of the featured page.
So, oh, that's cool.
So I thought, wow, there you go. We're on the Apple TV front and center. So there you go. All right, so now back to The Hobbit. Now that I'm breaking my arm, patting myself on the back. All right, what was I talking about? Oh, yes, Close Up. Close Up did a spot on the whole Hobbit thing, because the industrial dispute was going crazy at that point. Now, we all know that there was a march, mm-hmm. like 1,000 people strong march from the Weta workshop onto the union buildings, basically saying, we're union members too, so you're 30, 40 actors are going to take work away from us, right? And all this stuff. Well, and it all went a little bit crazy and chaotic. Anyway, they did a close-up, and this was way long, so I just abbreviated a couple of clips out of it. This was an interview with Peter Jackson and Philippa Boyens. And this kind of, this little grab I've got here kind of explains why they're so concerned about this dispute. Yep. Okay, so here's them talking.
You know what's been said, that, that the boycott was lifted on the weekend. But you guys knew that, and you let the act, you let the people from here go on that march last night.
Well, okay. Well, firstly, the boycott was instituted about a month ago, and immediately Warner Brothers and the Screen Actors Guild, who did the boycott, have been talking every day. Every single day we've been told the boycott's coming off, the boycott's coming off. Press statements have been issued, they've been agreed, they've been ignored. The next day's come, and it's just got completely tiresome. Plus, the concept that lifting the blacklist, and I've been trying to explain this to people because it's so important that everyone understands the seriousness of this. The blacklist is not the issue anymore. Lifting the blacklist doesn't solve the problem. It's a question of confidence in our industrial relations, and the damage was done within a week of the blacklist going on. And they are frankly worried because the actors bought a completely frivolous action down on the studio. Now, if they've done that once, what happens in a year's time when Warner Brothers have spent 250 mil, they're halfway through the film, and the actors decide to have some fun again? It's like it could happen all over again. They have no confidence.
It's not about.
And that's the issue.
It's not about New Zealand equity. It's about the actions behind their actions, and those were driven by an Australian union.
Are you anti-union?
Absolutely not. I was actually the proud executive director of the New Zealand Writers Guild, which is affiliated with the CTO.
And I'm in four unions.
Do you hate actors?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. No. I mean, this is the actions of a few actors, and I do honestly believe that the majority of those few actors don't actually understand the real repercussions and the situation.
Okay, so the just to clarify, that's Peter Jackson, and the woman with him is Philippa Boyens. Philippa Boyens, who is the co-writer and producer of The Hobbit. And I was thinking at first it was Fran Walsh. It's not Fran Walsh. Fran Walsh is his wife. She's also the co-writer. But that's Philippa Boyens. What he said there is a very relevant point, though, which is that it's about the confidence. You have an action like this. Even though they've lifted the ban now, Warner Brothers is going to be nervous about getting into bed with this production because the confidence has been broken. Now, Warner Brothers has gone down there and things have been resolved, and we'll talk about that in a second. I have one more clip from this particular interview, though, which is where Peter Jackson basically just explains he's trying to save his movie. Mm. All right? And this is the most important thing, is he's trying to save the film, and he does want to shoot it in New Zealand. So, and by the way, just out of trivia, I don't know if it's in this clip or not, but that set they're sitting on, just for those who really like a behind the scenes, that's Gollum's Cave being built. Mm. So, because they actually said, one of the questions that was raised was, you know, did you always plan to move it offshore? He goes, no, we're already building sets. You know, he said, this is Gollum's Cave, you know? So they don't want to leave it. Anyway, so here he is trying to save his movie. Watch this camera move, though. This is such a stupid camera move.
Helen Kelly from the CTU, Peter, said that you're behaving like a spoiled brat.
I'm trying to save my movie. She's behaving like somebody who thinks she knows about filmmaking. She hasn't got a goddamn clue. I was sitting at home, I watched the march on TV, I was saddened by these people having to fight for their jobs, but I thought, this is at least it's showing Warner Brothers that this country has a passion, that there are so many of our film workers want to make this film, and that's got to be a fantastic message. And then Helen Kelly comes on and she disses these people. She makes fun of them. She calls them,
a lynch mob.
And I'm thinking, Helen, you're in the CTU. You're representing the workers of this country. There's 1,000 people there that want your help. Don't you actually see that these 1,000 people are crying out for you to help them now, and yet you're siding with an Australian union? How dare you?
We don't disagree with actors having a voice in this industry. We don't disagree with them doing that.
But and unions, I don't disagree with unions. People have a fundamental right to have the best terms and conditions that they possibly can.
Okay, finally, we're going to be talking soon to Helen Kelly and Jerry Brownlee. What needs to happen between those two to make this work?
I don't know. I don't think Helen Kelly has a clue, and I think she should probably just go home, would be the most useful thing she could do. Jerry could definitely be helpful if he agreed to meet with Warners next week and talk to them. I think they just need some form of confidence. They don't want extra subsidies, all this conspiracy theory nonsense about them wanting more money and more subsidies. No, they don't. They've never mentioned to me at all that they want to see tax incentives increase.
It's gobsmacking because the terms and conditions for actors on The Hobbit were really good, and there was not one single New Zealand actor who wasn't going to be treated fairly. And also, we actually had British actors who were coming down, were probably going to be paid less than New Zealand actors.
And for the first time ever, New Zealand actors were going to get some residuals on The Hobbit. They were going to get a share of the profits.
Okay, so that was pre-Warner Brothers coming down, and I think everything he said there is I mean, I just love the fact that he talks about Helen Kelly like that. I mean, I think she should just go home. She's the head of the CTU, by the way, in New Zealand. All right, so Warner Brothers came down, and here is the staggering part to this whole story. It's been resolved. They're staying in New Zealand. The production is going ahead. All is good. Did we say last week? I think we did last week, where we said, you don't fuck with Peter Jackson.
No. All right. Peter Jackson got what he wanted.
And Peter Jackson
got fixed.
And not only that, they changed the law.
Now, if that isn't power, I don't know what is.
All right. So the government got together and they changed the law because they basically said, this is ridiculous. And so in America, when you work on a film, you are a contractor. Okay, so you, and this is what, we still have not heard, to this day, we still have not heard from Australian Actors Equity. They've just been bitch slapped to the ground, and they're licking their wounds because they haven't said a word about any of this, right? But the bottom line is, in America, you get hired onto a film, your agents and so forth negotiate your contracts, and you get hired onto the film for your fee. And everybody does this independently. You're a contractor, you get contracted for a film, you're done. The reason for this is because a film is not an ongoing business. A film is a one-off business. Usually, yep. Set up a corporation, doesn't matter if it's Paramount or not. If you read the copyrights, you'll often notice that they've got strange names for the production company. So because the company is set up, the film is made under that company's banner, which is owned by Columbia Pictures or whoever it might be, and then when the film is finished, the company is liquidated, right? Yep. Because it's a one-off company for doing one project. So you're a contractor to that film. The way it worked in New Zealand, which is the way that Actors Equity wants it to work in Australia as well, which is you're hired as an employee. And so unions can get involved and do these mass things because you go through employees and mass movements. Well, New Zealand basically said enough of this. This is all ridiculous. And they've now changed the law to specify that actors are contractors.
Yeah.
Which means suddenly it's taken all the bite out of this because everybody negotiates their own way. There are certain minimums that still have to be met, just like in Australia, there are minimums that have to be met, but you can negotiate your own way. And so now these actors are negotiating under independent contracts and so forth. And not only that, they didn't ask for it apparently because, as Peter Jackson said, they weren't asking for it, but the government was so desperate to keep Warner Brothers and The Hobbit in New Zealand, they offered them and gave them something like 15% increases to their tax breaks and all sorts of. They just basically just said, stay. So,
dude, can you blame them?
No, not at all. The amount, and apparently the government is now putting in something like 15% into the marketing budget because of the tourism.
Yeah,
so
of course.
All of this, the New Zealand government was petrified they were going to lose this wonderful piece of marketing for them. And so it's all done. The film is staying in New Zealand. It's all done. It's resolved.
Good on you, Peter Jackson.
And Peter Jackson, you don't fuck with Peter Jackson. All right. Yep. This is the man who just took on the union single-handedly and basically said, screw you.
Yeah.
You
know? He just, on TV, just said, I think you should just go home.
Go
and it happened.
Yeah, pretty much.
This man's voice commands entire armies and governments.
I would so like to meet Peter Jackson. I want to have a sit-down talk with Peter Jackson. I love the man. All right. So, Peter Jackson, if you're listening, I want to talk with you. All right? Send me an email. feedback@geekactually.com.
All right. We can dream.
We can. Now, Tron News.
Tron News.
Tron News.
Oh, God.
This little clip surfaced. Have a look at this. It's very short. It's not a trailer. It's just a clip. Came out of the blue. And while we're on Tron News, one of our listeners, and in fact, Katrina Smith, who our listeners will know, will be back on the show next week. She's coming on to help us review Red. Her sister actually got to go to Tron Night, you know, where they showed 20 minutes of the film.
Oh, yeah.
And she sent me a text message, which I said I would share with you all.
Oh.
But first, before we do that, Let's have a little look at this clip from Tron. This is a clip that shows... her name has gone out of my head. It's the actor playing Sam Flynn and the actress who is from House. 13 from House. Yeah. This is just a quick clip that shows them going off-road. Off-road in the computer world. Interesting idea. Here we go.
Choice. Their vehicles aren't designed to go off-grid. They'll malfunction on this terrain.
What about us?
Obviously not.
Where are you taking them?
Patience, Sam Flynn. All your questions will be answered soon.
Who knew you could go off-road in the computer?
I guess it's like backdoors and computer tech.
Unprogrammed areas, who knows? Very interesting. Olivia Wilde, thank you very much. Chat room to the rescue again. Olivia Wilde, who I think is hot. But anyway. Then, very quickly, this surfaced. Daft Punk has released basically a music video. But it's not really a music video. It's more like an extended trailer, but it's... done in kind of music video style. So here you go. Here is a track from Daft Punk called Derezzed, and it actually shows them in the movie. So you can, because they make a cameo in the film as well. So here you go. Here is the Daft Punk video clip for Derezzed.
I kept dreaming of a world I thought I'd never see. And then, one day,
something happened. Something.
I got in.
This can't be good. What am I supposed to do?
Here they come.
Change the scheme, alter the mood. Electrify the boys and girls, if you'd be so kind.
Come on.
Sorry?
I'm not sure if that's a video clip or a trailer.
I think it's a bit of both. It's they're really kind of pushing the Daft Punk. They've actually, the album cover has come out now for the soundtrack, and it's got them in their Tron gear and all this sort of stuff. So, look, I'm really keen now. What did Robin have to say about Tron Legacy? Excuse me while I just bring up my
scared
text message here. Okay, where are we? I should have had this already set up. Sorry about that. Yeah, here we are. Here we are. Okay. Now, it's written in text message speak, so bear with me while
we encode.
Okay. Hi, David. Regarding Tron, very impressive visuals, quite beautiful, really heavily plugged game, but hope game tie-in emphasis doesn't dominate film for non-gamers. Jeff is great and nuanced as usual. Don't know Sam, but could be a bit one note. I've heard that already.
Yeah, I've been hearing that already.
Yeah,
no, I've heard that.
Could be a bit one, but he did do a bit of acting in the Jeff scene. Sheen channels evil David Bowie.
I know, that's exactly what I was thinking.
He says, Sheen channels evil David Bowie rather well, always worth watching. Various stereotypical fanboy-pleasing cyber bits, doing suggestive things purposefully, stylish and strange with sufficient familiar objects to keep link with original. Looks good. Can't wait. Cheers, Robin.
Well, there you go. I'll be curious to watch it, because I mean, like, if it's a non-fan saying that, it can't be. Maybe it's the fans that are going to be really heavy on this one.
Apparently, she's a big fan of the original. We'll be interesting to see where she goes with that. Yeah. I can't wait. It looks great, you know. And even if the acting, look, if you go back to the original Tron, let's be honest. If you go back to the original Tron, the acting isn't actually that great, and the stories.
Who cared? It was fantastic.
It was a kids' film. Absolutely, it was fantastic fun. And as long as they can keep that kind of,
I don't
feeling
want an
about
adult
it,
version of Tron. Let me make that 100% clear. I am going into this with a kid's mentality.
Yeah, I want the sequel to Tron.
Exactly. I don't want it to be dark. I don't want it to be adult. I don't want it to cater to the generation that moved forward with it. No, I want this film to bring back the love that I had for Tron when I was a kid.
Damn straight.
So, yeah.
What's interesting, though, is that Disney, apparently, according to an article on bluesky.disney.blogspot.com, is afraid to release the Blu-ray of Tron. Apparently they've remastered it, they've got it ready to go, and they've decided to hold it because they have a fear that if they release it now, all of us fanboys are going to go, yeah, that's really good. What they're really worried about is kids seeing original Tron going, oh, that looks kind of dated, that looks kind of old-fashioned, and deterring them from seeing the new one, thinking it's going to be more of the same, which I think is a really odd way of doing it. But Disney apparently is quite afraid of this, so they've actually delayed the release of the Blu-ray of Tron until after the release of Tron Legacy.
Which, look, dude, I have to give them some credit, because if they released it now, they'd make a lot of money to actually do that. I mean, they may end up making a lot more money, but it's a risk.
It is a risk, because they're also saying, well, you know, you don't have to see the original. It'd be nice. That's kind of, which is kind of worrisome as well.
Anyway. I don't know. It's a bit either way.
I think the only other thing I've got to report today, and then we're going to go on to our list. I've got two things to report very quickly. First of all, and we'll just run through these very quickly because we don't need to go too in-depth. Batman 3 got its title.
Mm-hmm.
It is actually called, and I've actually don't have the article up in front of me. It's actually called The Dark Knight Rises.
Mm.
Christopher Nolan revealed the title, and he also revealed that it will not be the Riddler.
Oh, good.
All right. He said it will not be the Riddler. He wouldn't say what it is, but he said it will not be the Riddler. And more importantly, though, he also said it will not be in 3D.
Yes.
He said he much prefer to shoot it IMAX again, like he did with the first, with The Dark Knight. And he wants quality over gimmick. And he said, as far as he's concerned, he's going to shoot sections of it in IMAX again, like he did. And he's not going to do it in 3D.
There you go.
And all I've written in the show notes is, go Nolan, go Nolan, go Nolan.
Challenge the world. Challenge do it your world. Own way.
Damn straight. And the last thing we're just going to talk about really quickly before we go into our list is Captain America has been revealed. So we actually have our first official shots from Captain America. This is from the cover of this week's Entertainment Weekly, which shows a fairly heavily airbrushed version of the Captain, but you can see it's kind of gritty and dirty compared to those early renders that we saw. Mm. There's a couple of shots. We don't have a good clean shot of his entire costume, but we do have this one, which I think really sums up, if you remember our discussion many months ago, about how he had to be the ultimate Boy Scout. Mm-hmm. I think Chris Evans has actually captured that look very well. I think he's got that whole Boy Scout grin to his face.
Yeah.
He's obviously been working out. This is him shirtless.
There had to be a shirt.
There had
shot.
To be a
Jesus
shirtless.
Christ.
But you know what? With him, it was important because Chris Evans has always been kind of weedy, you know?
Yeah.
And he's buffed up.
Yeah, that's a big chest.
He's done some serious buffing up for this. And we get a shot of his old shield. So if you remember in World War II, he had the old shield, which gets shot up, and then he gets his vibranium shield later, which is the round one. So there's the original shield. So we've had our first shots. The film is due for release. I think it's May or June next year. Mm-hmm. So I am looking forward to Captain America. I'm very curious to see what they do to it.
Yeah.
Because as we discussed on the show several months ago, it is a really fine line between cheesy and working. So I think we'll wait till we see a little bit further down the track when we see a little bit more to it. All right, we're going to go into our lists of five. Now, I just closed my program, didn't I? Our list of five this week is what, Josh?
Well, look, it's top five. We had trouble defining it, right? Mm. So I'm going to explain.
Now, we never like doing anything easy.
No.
No,
let me explain my way of thinking, right? You said top five biopics, right?
Now, but I didn't want to use that term.
Exactly. We wanted to make very specific that I don't want it to be just top five movies that were a story of someone's life. And I don't want truest renditions, and I don't want things. I want the best movies that took a concept of someone's life and made it a good film, right? I don't want the exact story of their...
A la Social Network.
Exactly. And so I've stuck quite rigidly to that. So it's like stories that people created of their own life, be them true or not, the ones that made the most entertaining films.
Fair enough.
And that's what I've got.
All right. Son of a bitch. Looks like our recording has gone weird again. Anyway, we'll fix it up later. Okay, so we're going to say that this is... Real people in movies, basically, is what
Concepts of real people, like basically people being brought to film. Whether or not they come across the exact same way they were as people, ones that feel real, you know? Ones
Fair
that
enough.
Give a real idea of someone.
So, in other words, top five biopics.
Oh, yeah, all right. I don't know. When you see some of the things on my list, I'm not sure whether you're going to agree.
All right, well, I'm going to start us off. And I got to say, this was a really hard one. I've got a crap ton of honorary mentions, all right, because it's a really hard thing to weed down. I'm going to say that my number five on this list is, speaking of Michael Sheen, is The Queen. 2006 is Stephen Frears film about Queen Elizabeth II with Helen Mirren giving her Oscar-turning performance. Fantastic film. All right, so you're number five.
My number five is actually based on a biography, which is so obscure it's almost impossible to believe. But my top five is based on Chuck Berry's biography, which is Confessions of a Dangerous Mind, which is actually based on his biography. So it is a biopic.
But
for anyone that hasn't seen it, it is also about how apparently he was secretly a CIA agent.
Not Chuck Berry. That's not the word you wanted to use.
Chuck Barris?
Barris.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. He was, in his bio, he apparently...
It's a great film.
Exactly. And also, apparently, a really good read. But basically, yes, he believes that...
He was out of his mind.
Yes. The man was out of his mind. So
and
whether or not you want to
great performance.
It, exactly.
By Sam Rockwell. Yes, absolutely great performance.
So that's my number five.
No, I'll go with that. That was it.
Cool.
Based on his life.
Yeah.
Whether he made it up or not is not the issue. Number four I'm going to put down. It's kind of an obvious choice just because Joaquin Phoenix was so amazing in the role, which was Walk the Line, the 2005 James Mangold film. I think if it wasn't for Joaquin Phoenix, and even Reese Witherspoon to a degree, the film wouldn't have been.
I have never been a fan of... 90% of his music. Ooh. I was never really a fan of him at all, and for me to sit through that entire film and enjoy the music is a really, really, really
and Joaquin
thing.
Did all his own singing, which was also an amazing effort. You're number four.
My number four was Raging Bull.
Ah, good choice. I didn't even think of that
one. Yes, it is based on a true story.
Yeah, Jake LaMotta.
An unlikable boxer, as they would put him. So, an amazing story.
Considered to be, by the, I think it's the American Film Institute, as the best film of the 80s.
Yeah.
So.
Wow, there you go. Well, yeah, no, a great film, well shot, brilliant, beautiful. And, yeah.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Beautiful black and white photography. Mm. My number three is Steven Spielberg's 1993 Oscar winner, Schindler's List. Mm-hmm. Oscar Schindler's true story about him getting the Jews out by using them in his factory and so forth is inspiring. Now, this kind of fits our idea because he manipulated some of the elements of the story by combining characters together. Ben Kingsley's character actually didn't exist. It was actually an amalgam of like three characters, but it didn't deter from the fact that it was a brilliant film.
Absolutely.
Absolutely brilliant film. And great probably Liam Neeson's best performance ever. Mm. Your number three.
My number three, it was Walk the Line.
So, oh, well, there you go.
Yeah, no. Brilliant film.
Not much you can say other than the fact that Joaquin Phoenix, wow.
Yes, he was brilliant. The film was brilliant. Everything about it was really good.
Okay, my number two is All the President's Men. The true story of Woodward and Bernstein and Watergate and bringing down a president, starring Dustin Hoffman and Robert Redford. Absolutely brilliant film.
Oh, there you go.
Great stuff.
My number two is actually a movie which I found out the director and went, ah, there you go. There's one movie that I can finally say, all right, he is a brilliant director. I really enjoyed the film. This is Oliver Stone I'm talking about.
Ah, yes.
With The Doors.
Ah, which I thought you were going to say a different film there for a minute.
Exactly, which is a really interesting take, because the more I thought about this one, I almost scrapped it off the list, but I put it back on because it fits very much into the Social Network kind of category. A lot of it is very, you know, sort of, you know, up to your own opinion kind of a thing. But the underlying story, the performance from Val Kilmer, who has never really been a lead man for me. I've never really liked him.
He channeled.
Perfectly channeled. He looked like him. It's a great story. It's well told. And it's just beautiful.
Oh, yeah,
Beautiful film. And really interesting.
Agreed. It's funny, when we were talking about Oliver Stone the other day, we completely left that
yes.
one off.
No, dude, until I looked at the front cover recently, I was like, oh, I didn't even remember that one.
Jim Morrison, that's the name I was trying to come up with. Yeah, he channeled Jim Morrison. It was very kind of spooky. Okay, my number one is not only probably one of my favorite biopics, it's actually on my list of probably my top 30 films. I just absolutely love the film, which is 1996's Milos Forman film, People vs. Larry Flint. Which is a terrific film. Woody Harrelson is brilliant as Larry Flint. And the second performance after he making his big splash with Primal Fear of Edward Norton as his lawyer.
Yeah.
And also an amazing star turn from Courtney Love as his girlfriend/wife. Amazing film. Really, really fantastic film all about free speech. I mean, that's what it really came down to. Yes, he was a porn merchant, but it was about free speech and how he suffered for trying to defend freedom of speech, you know, and freedom of the press. Great film.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. All right. Well, my number one, I need to give one little tiny sort of sub thing before I explain. The film itself, for my number one, is not actually a biopic, right? But the story is written by the director, and that entire idea is based on his life while he toured with a whole lot of bands, like Led Zeppelin and so on.
Okay, I thought you were going to say something else for a minute there, but that's all right. I'll tell you what I was thinking you were going to say.
Yeah, no. And I just think, as a music lover, like a real solid music lover, I think it is the most true feeling of what it would be like to ride with the spirit of these bands.
I know what film you're talking about, and I should have thought about it. Yeah,
and it is almost famous.
Yeah, brilliant film.
And every time I watch the scene, it brings almost tears of joy. Is just the scene where they're all in the bus after the huge amounts of fights that they've had, and drugs, and punch ups, and wars, and just them singing "Hold Me Closer, Tiny Dancer" in the back of that van, and everybody just ends up singing it. It's just the perfect belief that no matter what happens, it's all about the music, and that's why
my favorite scene is where the guy falls asleep in the radio interview.
it's that whole really kind of like it's the perfect amalgamation of everything that is music, and though it may not be a true story itself, as a biopic, it's really beautiful to kind of see through the eyes of
someone. It's an amazing
kind of
film. It's one of Cameron Crowe's best films. Really is. It's just an amazing, amazing film. Well played, sir.
Yes. Well, there you go. So, yeah, that's
now. I got a few honorary mentions. If you haven't had enough of biopics and you want a few more biopics or great realistic films, go have a look at Gorillas in the Mist or Glory, which is, quite frankly, I'm surprised I didn't actually put it on the list itself, but Glory is one of my favorite films. Apollo 13, Mississippi Burning, which is also a real powerhouse
Burning
film.
Yeah.
The Runaways, which we reviewed a few months ago. Yeah. Braveheart, which is also a real person, and that's a TV movie made in 76, could have been earlier, which is with Sally Field, called Sybil, about the girl who has multiple personalities, which is an amazing, amazing performance by Sally Field. Emmy award-winning performance, in fact. So there's a couple for you, and I also wanted to say, when you first started talking about your number one, and you said it wasn't a true story as such, but it was his recollections of being there on a tour. Yeah. I thought you were about to say Platoon, because that was, you could almost exactly sum up Platoon saying the same way. It's not a true story as such, but he was on tour in Vietnam. It is his recollections of what Vietnam was about.
Whenever I think of biopics, I know that it's not a biopic, but it always goes straight to the top of my list because, you know, like it or lump it, 90% of biopics that are out there are renditions or tellings from a person's perspective, right? Cameron Crowe just holds that beautiful feeling of these bands that he's with and his kind of like tour through the messiness of the backstage that is musical, you know, sort of like touring. And it was just, it feels real. Not a moment of that film feels like a film. It feels like a real life telling of someone's experiences. And that's just why it'll always be number one.
Now, we also have, my wife also wanted to mention JFK is another one. Oliver Stone, again, fantastic film. In our chat room, we've got Stander, The Runaways has been mentioned, Hackers 2, Delta! Aaron Brockovich.
Deleting that comment.
Aaron Brockovich has been mentioned in the chat room. Yes, also love that film. We Were Soldiers from Delta Knight. Yeah, so, and they said if we get too convoluted with our top five movies, they just say, why don't we just say top five movies where people wear hats? Miller's Crossing, best film. Number one.
Right along.
All right, so there's our top five. We're going to do a little bit of housekeeping and get out of here because we're running long again, as usual.
Really,
today.
Us running long?
This whole day is running long today. All right, so let's shoot through housekeeping really quickly, and then we'll get out of here. We're going to say agree or disagree with anything we have to say about The Social Network or anything else we talk about. Send your feedback to feedback@geekactually.com, or you can voicemail us at 02-8011-3167. And Josh, I believe you have a website that you would like to talk about?
Yes, and just before that, though, I want to point out that Octane agrees with, has a title that you talk about quite a bit, and he was saying, continue on the tech theme, how about the Pirates of Silicon Valley?
Oh, absolutely, yes.
Yeah, there you go.
Yes. So there's another, once again, made for TV movie, so it falls in with that Sybil category. So, but yeah, really good. I really enjoy Pirates of Silicon Valley. I'm going to get Josh to watch it. He hasn't seen it yet. So.
Okay. Cool. I'll have to watch.
All right, now, where were we?
We were talking about me. RawDLC.com. If you guys haven't been there, it's a gaming website. We are awesome. We have had another hit growth. So we've been growing every month contextually, and we are still
continually,
doing...
You
contextually,
you mean? Contextually?
Continually. All right,
it's getting hot in here.
You know what? It's far too hot to be talking... Roddy LC, go look at it. And we have a live show, and it's a Tuesday's Australian time, and it's at 8 p.m. That's it. I'm done.
You're out of here. All right. And we'll just a couple plugs out there. Just remember, you can buy Geek Actually stuff at cafepress.com.au/geekactually. Fan page is at facebook.com/geekactually. All our artwork is done by the wonderful Josh Spencer at attackninja.blogspot.com, and he is brilliant. Go have a look at his stuff. And remember, for our audio listeners, if you want to watch us live and see what is all this chaos, you can come and watch us live. We start at 12 p.m. every Saturday, Australian Eastern Daylight Savings Time, which is UTC+11. Geekactually.com/live. The Film Actually Show is the second show, so if you want to skip tech, just jump ahead about an hour, so start about 1 o'clock, and you can jump in. We would be remiss if we didn't mention our friends very quickly. We have a couple of other podcasts that we love, and we love the guys who are involved. And first of all, we have The Real Junkies, R-E-E-L Junkies. You can find them on iTunes. They're like us, they review films, but they generally get sauced up before they do it on tequila. You can also find their website, weekendronan.com. Our other friends, and they're kind of relevant this week, is the Movie Fan House guys. They do the Movie Fan Cast and Right This Instant. That's Charlie, Brad, and Jesse. And the reason why I say it's fairly relevant is because their Walking Dead cast actually starts this week. They're recording their first session because Walking Dead premieres this Halloween in America. And I have to say that I'm honored that Charlie has actually asked me to be on the first episode. So nice. I'll be recording that with them on Monday. So be looking on the lookout for Walking Dead Cast. And you can find everything that they do over at moviefanhouse.com. And you'll find all their back episodes, links, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that's it. I think we're done.
Done.
Now, assuming the board doesn't crash, we do have some music by Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross. This is from the soundtrack of The Social Network, because we like to go out with a piece of the soundtrack. I'm going to pray and cross my fingers that this doesn't crash. This is a track called In Motion, I believe it's called. So in the meantime, go see more movies. You don't see enough movies. And all of life's questions are answered in the movies. And Josh and I will catch up with you next week. Bye now.
Bye.